and having writ moved on, nor all your piety nor wit shall lure it back to cancel half a line, nor all your tears wash out a word of it. Twenty crowded years have passed. 1914, 1934. A score of years that once belonged to us, but which now belong to history. Crowded years they were. Years in which we laughed and worried, fought and played, sang and cried, loved and were loved, lived or were born. Time has written with indelible ink the record of those years. Written them in his book, in our memories, in our hearts. There are paragraphs in red that tell of war, red as the poppies of Flanders fields. Some are written in black. Science, invention, achievement, art. Black as steel girders hung against the sunset by the hands of men. Come back through the pages. Find that yesterday that we call today. 20 years ago, June 28, 1914.
I'm tired.
Well, sit down on the curb, then.
If I do, somebody will get my place. Then I won't be able to see your stupid reduction.
I am not going to hold you up. Just make up your mind to that.
How much longer do we have to wait, Mama?
How do I know? I declare you're the most spoiled child in Sarajevo.
The clock struck 12. The burgomaster must be making an awfully long speech.
Oh, do be serious. It was you, not I, who wanted to come. No pleasure to me, I assure you, to stand here on the corner of Rudolph Street and be ogled by those men in that barber shop.
I wanted to see what the Archduke Francis Ferdinand looked like. He'll be our emperor someday, won't he, Mother?
Yes.
Why do those two men in the doorway of that barber shop keep looking at us?
Because they've no manners, I imagine. Those Serbian suits are all alike. They always have an eye out for a petticoat. Come on, we'll move down here where they won't be around.
All right, Mother.
Lady and the little boy have moved out of the way.
Yes. Oh, why don't they come so that we can get it over with?
Nervous, Gavrilo?
Why shouldn't I be?
Yeah, be careful. Keep that gun well hidden under your coat. That barber sees it.
I know. I wish it weren't necessary to kill the Duchess. I don't like killing women.
Yeah, what's the matter? You losing your nerve? Get hold of yourself, man. For this day's deed, the name of Gavrilo Princip will go down in history. You will become a public idol. The man who assassinated the heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne. Listen. Do you hear that? Those cheers mean that the Archduke and Duchess have left the city hall and are on their way to the palace. In but a few moments, they'll calm us past our little doorway at the corner of Rudolph Street. And then? Your hand must be steady. Your aim true. You must forget yourself. And remember Serbia.
Remember Serbia.
Ah, the car. I can see it. The moment is almost here.
But what will happen to us, Nadelio?
What does it matter? We will be marched to a great cause. Ready, Gabriel. Aim. Fire. Again.
Serbia! Serbia!
Archduke Francis Ferdinand and the Duchess of Hohenberg was teased lightly by American newspapers. America was more concerned with the trouble in Mexico. The United States Marines had landed at Veracruz 2 months previous. The Reverend Billy Sunday was in Philadelphia challenging the devil to a fight to the finish. The silver screens were silent and piano players supplied the musical settings for the perils of Pauline. The declarations of war by the great powers and the early battles excited America. The invasion of Belgium, the occupation of Brussels, the bombardment of Louvain were read of and talked about. But in the early part of September 1914, when maps told that the German army was within a few miles of Paris and the long gray line...
François, have you read the proclamation of Gallieni? Military Governor Talos.
Quiet the air, the horn of my taxi cab. It has the proof for something. How can I fix it when you yell so?
Your taxi cab. France wants it.
For what?
To move volunteers to the Marne. Soldiers to keep the horn from marching into Paris.
France wants Eloise. That's my beloved Eloise, whose wheels know only the streets.
Oui, c'est demain.
Whose internal workings make more noise than the German guns.
Yes. Will you drive her?
I will let no one else drive her. Vive la France! Come, Eloise, share yourself. You and I, we go to fight the war.
The taxicab army caught the imagination of America. People began to read their papers for news of the Great War. Then, after a winter of war, on May 8, 1915, the country was electrified when it learned of a tragic incident that brought the conflict very close to home. It was...
Hello, Mr. Foreman.
Hello, Charlie Klein.
Where are we, anyway?
Off the southern point of Ireland. Over there, 8 or 10 miles away, that's the old head of Kinsale.
Well, it won't be long till we're safe ashore again. I don't mind telling you that I was a bit worried when I read that note the German embassy inserted in the papers on the days we said Danish Ale.
It didn't mean a thing.
It stated the travelers sailing in the war zone on ships of Great Britain or her allies did so at their own risk. The odd part about it was that that notice was right under the sailing notice of this ship.
Well, we've gotten through all right. We've passed the submarine area.
Been a very pleasant crossing. Well, they missed a rich haul by not sinking this boat.
Yes. A very distinguished passenger list. Alfred Gwynne Vanderbilt, Elbert Hubbard, Herbert Stone, Justice Miles Forman, Charlie Stein.
Oh, don't forget yourself. Charles Stoneman is not a name to be dismissed.
What's that over there?
Where? About 3/4 of a mile to starboard.
Why, looks like a whale or a porpoise.
Yes, it does. A chap was telling me about the time his ship hit a whale.
Hey, sister.
Not a torpedo.
There.
Make more.
There will be safe for plenty before this war is over. Ship match to 24 meters and put to sea.
Ship match to 24 meters. A match to 24 meters.
America adopted the policy of watchful waiting, reading of the execution of Nurse Cattle, the attack at Verdun. Then, on March 9th, 1916, came the news that the United States had been invaded.
Hurry up, buddy. Get us through to New York. Saint-Jean-Vier, Revolutionary General, crossed the American border and attacked the town of Columbus, New Mexico, and the adjacent camp of the 13th U.S. Cavalry, killing 9 civilians and 8 troopers.
9 civilians and 8 troopers.
American troopers pursued Villa's army, killing 50 Mexicans on American soil and 70 more on the Mexican side of the border. Villa had about 1,500 men. Pursued...
Brigadier General John J. Pershing came into the limelight when he was sent into Mexico to capture Villa. But the expedition came to naught. Black Jack and his men were ordered to withdraw when Washington received conciliatory notes from President Carranza. On July 22nd, while the Second Battle of the Somme was being fought, a great preparedness day parade was held in San Francisco. It was a little after 2 p.m. Bands were playing, people were laughing, cheering, and...
Camera up here, Bill. You can get a good shot from this angle. Boy, if I was Mayor Ralph, I wouldn't march for nobody in a day like this. Preparedness parade or no preparedness parade.
Go on, you're a pacifist anyway.
Why, I am not. So what I say is this. Let them fight what wants to fight. What do I care about bleeding Belgium?
Well, you ought to care. Besides, what about all them Americans who were killed on the Lusitania? And that Italian ship, the Ancona, and that French boat, the Sussex?
Well, they ought to stayed off them ships. They were warned.
Not supposing they were. What if you'd have had a brother, or a sister, or a father, or a mother on one of them ships? Wouldn't you want to fight about it?
Well, maybe. But I didn't. So that's that. Remember what President Wilson said. That there's such a thing as being too right. So right that you're too proud to fight.
Yeah, Wilson. What does he know about fighting? He was a college professor. Now, if Teddy Roosevelt was president...
Oh, shut up now and write down the tag for this reel.
I can remember it.
Write it down. Preparedness Day Parade, passing corner of Stewart and Market Street. Here it comes.
Might have some trouble before this is over. Some of the labor unions refuse to march.
You're always looking for trouble or a fight. I hope someday you get your stomach full of it.
I already got my stomach full of trouble. I ate some green apples when I was little.
Too bad they didn't kill you.
Some pacifist bombed the parade.
Get up and get down off these steps before you get your full head blown off. Come on.
Killed and 40 wounded by the explosion of the bomb. Thomas J. Mooney, a labor organizer, and Warren K. Billings were sentenced to death and to life imprisonment, respectively. Yet, as the evidence was mostly circumstantial, Mooney's sentence was later commuted to life imprisonment. It was during this same month of July, 1916.
Gosh, they ought to do something about this.
About what, John?
Well, this German submarine, the Deutschland, coming clear across the ocean and landing at Norfolk, Virginia. Just as easy as you please.
Well, what can they do about it? Well,
don't they realize what that means down in Washington? If we went to war with Germany, they could bring over a whole army that way.
Oh, I don't think so, John. Submarines aren't big enough.
Well, it could be done all right. Tell you, those Germans are pretty smart. I bet you they had something to do with those munitions explosions over at Black Tom Island, Jersey City. $22 million worth of property just blown to blazes.
Oh, that was just an accident.
I don't know. They'd do anything. Have you read those atrocity stories? How they cut off the hands of children, crucify Canadian soldiers, mutilate Belgian women, and they fertilize them.
President Woodrow Wilson defeated Charles Evans Hughes and was reelected. The campaign slogan was, "We kept us out of war." In December, the Kaiser sent peace terms to the Allies, but they were rejected as empty and insincere. The direct result was a note from Germany delivered to our State Department on January 31st, 1917 by German Ambassador von Bernstorff. There was a cabinet meeting 2 days later. When President Wilson entered, the members noticed that he had grown tired and old. His shoulders drooped as if from a great weight and...
Allow me, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Daniels. Sit down, gentlemen. You've read the note from Germany.
We have, Mr. President, but we haven't discussed it.
It resolves itself down to this. Germany warns the United States that she will begin unrestricted submarine warfare.
Hey, it doesn't seem possible, Mr. President.
There's the note, Mr. McAdoo.
Do they want to fight the whole world? What are we going to do about it?
Shall I break off diplomatic relations?
Well, if we don't, they say we're weaklings or cowards.
I am for prompt action. We've said a lot. Now we must act or swallow our brave words.
All right, Mr. McAdoo. We've got to make good our warning to Germany.
Gentlemen, please. This is a grave situation to be considered carefully.
Mr. President.
Mr. Houston.
As I see it, we must start from where we are and take the next right step. Nothing worse can ever befall us, and no greater insult can be offered to any people. If we acquiesce, we ought not to pose as a nation or as a free people. We ought to invite the Kaiser to set up as our permanent dictator. I am for asserting our rights, for standing with the Allies, for doing our part.
All very well, Mr. Houston, but it doesn't reach far enough. What is the proposal? What is the concrete suggestion? I must go to Congress. What shall I say?
Sever diplomatic relations and let come what will.
Tell Congress what you have done and why you did it.
Say that you propose to protect American lives and rights.
You all believe that that is the right thing to do?
Yes.
Very well. Mr. Lansing, I direct you, Secretary of State, to announce to His Excellency, the German Ambassador, von Bernstorff, that all diplomatic relations between the United States and the German Empire are severed.
Germany suggests that she and Mexico form an alliance with the understanding that Mexico is to reconquer her lost territory in Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona.
Exactly. That is exactly what it means.
It's got a deeper meaning than that. It means war.
Wilson took matters into his own hands and on March 9th, 1917, directed that guns and gunners be placed on merchant ships and at the same time summoned a special session of Congress to meet April 16th. A few days later came 3 overt acts by Germany. 3 American vessels, American built, American manned, American owned, were sunk by U-boats. Wilson dramatically advanced the special session of Congress to April 2nd, announcing it would meet to receive a communication concerning grave matters. That evening was one to be long remembered. Outside, the illuminated dome of the Capitol.
Oh, excuse me, mister.
Anne!
Charlie! Oh, my goodness, if I'd known it was you, I wouldn't have apologized. Just another news hound.
Why don't you look where you're going? You knocked the wind right out of me.
My eyes were so full of rain, I couldn't see.
Just a sob, sister, with rainwater tears.
I wanted to see President Wilson arrive. Have they done anything inside yet?
No, they've been waiting for the president.
Goodness, I'm so... Tell me something. Why does it always have to rain when something important happens? Is everyone here?
All Washington, it looks like. They put chairs down in front for the Supreme Court, the cabinet, and all the diplomats. Spring Rice of Great Britain and Joseph Rand of France were there looking pleased as punch.
Gee, that must mean something.
It certainly does. When a diplomat looks happy, something's going to happen. Listen, sounds like the president has started to speak. Come down here so we can get what he's saying.
Oh, my feet are soaked. I twist when I walk.
Listen.
We have no quarrel with the German people. It was not upon their impulse that their government acted in entering this war.
That doesn't sound like a declaration of war to me.
You wouldn't know if it
was. German submarine warfare is a warfare against mankind. It is a war against all nations. The challenge is to all mankind. There is one choice we cannot make. We are incapable of making. We will not choose the path of submission. With a profound sense of the solemn and even tragic character of the step I am taking, and of the grave responsibility which it involves, I advise that the Congress declare the recent course of the Imperial German government to be, in fact, nothing less than war against the government and people of the United States, and that it formally accept the status of belligerent which has thus been thrust upon it.
Charlie, it is war. It
certainly is, honey. Where do you see me in a uniform?
The world must be made safe for democracy. We shall fight for the rights and liberties of small nations, for a universal dominion of rights by such a concert of free peoples as shall bring peace and safety to all nations and make the world itself at last free.
War. My brother, I wonder if he'll have to go.
Sure, why not? It'll be a lot of fun.
With such a task, we can dedicate our lives and our fortunes, everything that we are and everything that we have, with the pride of those who know that the day has come when America is privileged to spend her blood and her might for the principles that gave her birth and the happiness and peace which she has treasured. God helping her, she can do no other.
The draft bill was passed on May 18, 1917, and on June 5th, between the hours of 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., 10 million men between the ages of 21 and 30 were registered for service. The camps and cantonments. 16 camps and 16 cantonments. Each of the 32 camps or cantonments with a capacity of 40 or 50,000 men. The army was spending $1 million an hour. Out of 10 ports, 2,086,000 soldiers sailed for France. Herbert Hoover was appointed food administrator. Mondays and Wednesdays became weaker. Tuesdays, meatless. Thursdays and Saturdays, pauper. War savings stamps. Liberty bonds. Living sweaters and socks. 75,000 orators became 4-minute men. Victory bread. Help starving Belgians. Lightless nights for all places of amusement. No gasoline on Sundays. Work or fight. First shot by American troops in France was on October 27, 1917. The first American casualties, November 1st. On November 7th, the Bolshevists under Lenin seized supreme power in Russia. The Prohibition Amendment to the Constitution of the United States was submitted to the states. Matahari, dancer and spy, was executed by a French firing squad. But the American doughboy still had their first love, Mademoiselle Fromentelle. January 8, 1918. President Wilson made 14 points of peace speech to Congress. The Battle of the Somme began on March 21st. Big Brother shelled Paris from a distance of 75 miles on March 23rd. The Battle of the Aisne began on May 27th and on July 16th by Bolshevik orders at Ekaterinburg.
He stumbled as though he was drunk or blind.
Commander, he won.
It is over. All them Nurkowski. All seven.
Yes. I, myself, shot the Tsar Nicholas. I was reading the sentence by torchlight as they stood against the wall. As I finished, the Tsar stepped forward to say something. I pulled my revolver and shot him straight through the head. Then the soldiers fired on the others.
And now, Yurkovsky?
I don't know. I'm afraid. Fancy Yurkovsky being afraid.
We'd better remove the bodies to some isolated spot. We might even drench them with petroleum and destroy them by fire.
Yes. Yes, Ivan. That would be best.
The Tsar is dead. Long live the Soviet!
Long live the Soviet!
In a wood they call the Rouge Bouquet, there is a new-made grave today.
German dead and wounded, 7,142,558.
Built by never a spade nor pick, yet covered with earth 10 meters thick.
Russian dead and wounded, 9,150,000.
There lie many fighting men, dead in their youthful prime.
Italian dead and wounded, 2,197,000.
Never to laugh nor love again. Nor taste the summertime.
British dead and wounded, 3,190,235.
For death came flying through the air and stopped its flight at the dugout stair, touched his prey, and left them there, clay to clay.
French dead and wounded, 6,160,800.
He hid their bodies stealthily in the soil of the land they fought to free, and fled away.
Austro-Hungarian dead and wounded, 7,020,000.
Now over the grave, abrupt and clear, three volleys ring, and perhaps their brave young spirits hear the bugles sing.
American dead and wounded, 350,000.
Go to sleep. Go to sleep. Slumber well where the shells screamed and fell.
Total casualties of all warring nations, 35,494,186.
Let your rifles rest on the muddy floor. You will not need them anymore. Danger's past. Now at last, go to sleep. Austria surrendered. German sailors mutinied. Soldiers revolted. The line of battle fell back faster and faster toward Berlin. A cablegram from Brest came on November 7th, 1918, in time to make the early afternoon take.
How do I look, Jean?
Wonderful, Mother. Father will be so proud of you. I can hardly wait for him to come home.
You suppose he's heard?
Oh, of course he has.
The whole town's gone wild. Parade, dance, celebration. Listen.
Isn't that his key in the door?
Yes. Oh, Mother, it doesn't seem possible that it's all over. If it went to that flag in the window with its gold star for
we
Henry.
We mustn't think of that now. We must just be glad that no more boys will be killed.
Yes. Oh, what makes Dad so slow? Dad?
Yes, Jean?
Come in here. We're all ready to celebrate. We're all dressed up in our best. And we've got a table down the hotel. Why, what's the matter?
John, what is it?
It was all a mistake. The armistice wasn't signed this morning.
What are you saying?
Washington and Paris know nothing about it.
They're still fighting. The war's still going on.
Yes, yes. On and on and on, I guess.
Oh, this is hard. They sound good. We must live and die. Dying for war.
Mother, please.
Oh, no,
Mother,
Mother,
don't do that.
Don't.
Please don't do that.
John, they've got to stop. They've got to stop.
Yes, dear. And they will. Someday.
November 9th. The Kaiser abdicated and the Allied line advanced within 18 miles of German soil. November 10th. Revolutionists seized Berlin and the Kaiser fled to Holland. Pershing's armies advanced on a 71-mile front. In the early hours of November 11th, in a small, sleeping Midwestern town, the editor of a local paper dozed in his office under a lone light. A dog barked far away over the cornland. It was just 2:22 a.m. and the telephone bell started him to wake.
Hello. Hello. Yes. Hello. Yes. This will be good then. What? Topeka. All right, go ahead. What? What's that you said? The armistice. The war is over? You're sure? It's not another fault? Oh, thank God. Well, that's news. That's the best news we'll ever print. Yes. Goodbye.
Confession to the peace conference. Inaugurated at Versailles, January 18, 1919. And 5 months later, during which Wilson saw his 14 points repudiated one by one, the treaty was signed by the plenipotentiaries of Germany and the Allied powers. It was the end of the war. Yet the final page was written over 2 years later, when America's unknown soldier was buried at Arlington National Cemetery. And the bugle sounded the final word. Woodrow Wilson's treaty and his League of Nations were defeated in the Senate. So against the advice of his physician, he determined to make a direct appeal to the people. Some 40 speeches in cities scattered from coast to coast. 22 grueling days had passed. Days of brain fag and violent headaches. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning of September 26th. Wilson had spoken the day before in Chicago.
Yes? Dr. Brayton, just a moment. So what's the matter?
The president's asking for you. He's seriously ill.
I was afraid of that. Just a minute till I slip on the dressing gown.
This afternoon in Paris, when he broke into tears in the middle of his speech.
I knew he was very close to the edge.
Yes. I wish you'd persuade him to return to Washington.
I'll do my best, Dr. Brayton. He's a very sick man.
He doesn't realize how sick. This afternoon when they stopped the train and he and Mrs. Wilson went for a little walk down that country road. He came back with a temperature. I gave him a narcotic, hoping he'd sleep through the night. He woke up about an hour ago in a dreadful condition.
I'm ready. Come along.
You'll be surprised and shocked when you see him. There's sort of paralysis. His left arm and leg, and the left side of his face. He can't talk very clearly.
I see.
Come in.
Good morning, Mrs. Wilson.
Good morning.
Good morning, Governor.
Governor, you're the only one who calls me that, Hamilton. Reminds me of our early days together when I was governor of New Jersey.
Are you feeling better?
Oh, I'm all right. Oh, my dear Hamilton, this hasn't happened to me before. I don't know what to do.
You've got to cancel the rest of the trip, of course.
I can't do that, Hamilton. You see, that if I do,
Senator Lodge and his friends to say that I'm a quitter and that the Western trip was a failure and the treaty will be lost.
What's the difference, Governor?
No, I've got to go on. And I've got to write my speech for Wichita. I've got to do that now. It's getting late. I must. Raven. Come on here. My left arm. My left leg. They won't move. Something's the matter with them. They won't move.
There, Mr. President. You lie down and rest. I'm sure you'll be much better by morning.
Yes, lie down and rest, Governor. Don't worry about Wichita. Don't worry about the treaty. Don't worry about anything. We're all going home.
The White House became a house of mystery, and it was whispered that Woodrow Wilson was mad, was dying, was dead. He recovered sufficiently to take some part in the 1920 presidential campaign. There were many new voters, for on August 26th, the 19th Amendment giving suffrage to women was proclaimed in effect. Wilson hoped that the voters would rise and vindicate him and his city by electing James M. Taft. Warren Gamaliel Harding was swept to the presidency by a majority of 7 million votes. The son of Woodrow Wilson, wartime president, was second. He died in a house on S Street, Washington, February 3rd, 1924. As the Senate and House had gone to the state legislature. By January 1919, 36 had ratified, and it was part of the Constitution. The proclamation was signed by Acting Secretary of State, Frank L. Polk, and the scratch of his pen, so the guys firmly believed, signed the death knell of John Barleycorn. America was dry, or was it?
Hello.
Let us know what train you
were
coming.
Oh, I ain't old. I can't get around by myself. How's said, Matilda?
Fine. Come on in. You must be tired to death.
I am, a little bit.
What you need is a nice warm bath. Oh, dear, I forgot.
What's the matter?
Fred's using the bathtub to make dinner.
Oh, there ain't no hurry.
This is your bedroom. How's everything in Sister?
Just fine. But new carpet for the church.
That's wonderful. Where did the money come from?
Well, the Reverend Carter was out walking in the country about a month ago. So here comes down a car coming down the road behind him. The headlights jumping up and down in the dark.
Now, don't tell me the Reverend Carter was run down and they bought the church carpet with the damage money.
Oh, no, nothing like that. The Reverend stands out in the middle of the road and waves his arms, thinking maybe he'd get a lift back to town. Next thing he knew, the car stopped. A fellow leaned out and handed him an envelope, saying, "You cops are getting greedier every day." Then off the car went like a streak of greased lightning.
They must have been bootlegged,
maybe. Anyway, they left the Reverend standing in the road with the envelope. So,
15 million gallons of industrial alcohol diverted to the throats of American drinkers. The value of this contraband for 1 year only was estimated at $14 million. It was easy money, and it created the American gangster.
Everything set, Blackie?
Ready to roll, Nick. As sure as it's going to be a surprise to the town of Cicero.
We'll get him, all right. It was an unlucky day when they rubbed out Diana Banyan. I don't know who did it, but somebody's going to pay for it.
Sure.
And I give him a first-class funeral. A $10,000 casket and 26 truckloads of flowers.
Sure. And did you see the basket?
I saw the basket. With a card on it that said, "From Al." If I can find it, I'll send it back to Al Capone for his own funeral tomorrow.
But Scarface Al Capone escaped by lying flat on his stomach. He escaped to become known as public enemy number one. He rode about Chicago in an armored car. He had an estate in Miami, and high politicians and judges, it is said, took orders from him. He was finally convicted on a charge of evading the income tax law and sent to Atlanta. Capone was not the only gangster. Liquor, not the only racket. The 1920s saw the cleaning and dyeing racket, the garage racket, the laundry, the slot machine, the fish, the flowers, and artichoke racket, and others too numerous to mention. Racketeering in the 1920s was a national institution. The machine gun, its insignia. Every decade, so it is said, has an invention that revolutionizes the habits of everyone. 1900 saw the beginning of the automobile. 1920 saw the beginning of radio. On November 2nd of that year, the first broadcasting station was opened in East Pittsburgh to carry the Harding Cox elections return. It was about the time when everyone...
Jerry, will you stop shaking the table? You knocked my wall down.
That wasn't me. I haven't moved. Two bamboos. Can't you people play Mahjong without yelling? How do you expect me to hear anything with this wireless set?
You can't hear anything on it anyway. I've tried it. Say, Mabel, let's go to Atlantic City for our honeymoon.
Can't you people be quiet? I have almost got it.
You got it bad. The radio bug. Say, who's this Calvin Coolidge who's running for vice president?
He was governor of Massachusetts during the Boston police strike.
Oh, is that the guy? Say, he did a good job there.
Will you two shut up? I almost had it then. Wait a minute. I got it. I got KDKA Pittsburgh.
You got Pittsburgh, and you're giving me a pain.
Listen, will you? Cox is running way behind. It looks like a Harding landslide.
No fool.
That's what they say. Harding is carrying everything by a large majority.
Well, what do you know about that? Let's open up a couple of bottles of homebrew and drink to Harding and Republican prosperity.
Mahjong sets were eventually stored in trunks in the attic. Calvin Coolidge, upon the death of Harding 2 years and 5 months after he took office, became the 30th president of the United States. Wireless became radio, and all America, all the world, soon had a ringside seat to hear the greatest orchestras, the greatest singers, the greatest entertainers. Radio became a part of political campaigns, a means of disseminating news, a graphic method of teaching literature, history, geography, and science in our schools. Radio, the electric word, was a great invention of this decade. The Teapot Dome scandal rocked the country, and so did the Loeb Leopold case in Chicago. In Dayton, Tennessee, Brian and Darrow argued evolution. A songwriter composed a song on the death of Floyd Collins. Red Grange, the Iceman, became a national idol. The Charleston and Black Bottom came and went. The Halls Mill and Snyder Gray cases filled the newspapers. The crossword puzzle rose and fell. And on the morning of May 20th, 1927, a little before 8 o'clock...
Is it going to take off?
I guess so. He had his plane brought out and fueled. He's warming up the motor now.
It's nasty weather, but the weather report says there's a chance of a clearing.
Oh, it's a long way to go all alone.
I'll say. $25,000 if he makes it. And Davy Jones' locker if he don't.
Crowds stood in front of bulletin boards. 40,000 hard-boiled boxing fans rose and stood with bared heads when they were asked for a silent prayer for a flying fool. The spirit of St. Louis was reported over the Irish coast, over England, over the English Channel, at La Bourget Peace. Stated that he did not choose to run. Herbert Hoover was nominated to run against Alfred E. Smith. Talking pictures were replacing the silent films. The stock market was page one news. Prosperity was the keynote of the presidential campaign. And Herbert Hoover said...
Gentlemen, one of the oldest and perhaps the noblest of human aspirations has been the abolition of poverty. We in America today are nearer to the final triumph over poverty than ever before in the history of any land. The poorhouse is vanishing from among us.
Broker told me he was putting everything he had into Akron Steel.
Oh, he's a fool.
The streetcar conductor told me that steel was going down and cotton was the thing.
Why, cotton's no good at all, John. The man who delivers the laundry told me that.
What does he know about it?
He's got a sister who's a train nurse, and one of our patients told her.
Gosh, everybody's playing the market, aren't they? Even the bootblack who shined my shoes, they told me that he'd bought some Union Motors.
Well, it's the only way to get ahead. John J. Raskob has an article in this month's journal called Everybody Ought to Be Rich. He says if you save $15 a month and invest it in good common stock, allowing the dividends and rights to accumulate for 20 years, you'd have $80,000 or an income of $400 a month.
A swell idea, all right. A fellow was telling me today that these stock prices will look ridiculously low in another year or two.
Thursday, October 24th, 1929.
Isn't it about time for the gong?
Two more minutes.
I don't like the look of the crowd this morning. They're worried.
Oh, what are they worried about? Didn't Fisher say stock prices reached a permanent high?
Yes, but Warburg doesn't agree with it.
Yeah, but how about Mitchell of National City? He says the credit situation isn't critical.
I know, but you...
There's the gong. You see? Stop worrying now and get ready.
$185, $181. General Electric, $315. Why it opened at $400 this morning was the use of watching that figure. It's an hour and a half late. The bottom's dropped out, I tell you. It isn't short selling, it's forced selling. Hundreds of thousands of shares dumped on the market by men and women whose margins are exhausted.
Something's got to be done.
Well, what can be done? You and I'll just sit here and be wiped up with the rest of them. Come in, come in. What is it, Charlie?
The screams. It's awful. It's a panic. They're yelling and shouting and tearing each other like madmen. They're throwing 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 shares on the market with orders to sell at any price.
I know.
Oh, they've gone mad. Some of them are crying. Some of them are laughing. Some of them are flying on the floor and beating their heads on the stone floor.
They'll do more than that before this is over.
But where are the bankers who are supposed to be able at any moment to support prices?
The big bull market is over. You and I and everyone else who rode the wave is being sold out. We're broke. Those chickens in every pot, those two cars in every garage... are gone.
I'm not going to sit here. I'm going to do something. Come on, Charlie.
Gracie, get my wife on the phone for me, will you? Thanks. And Gracie, I don't want to be disturbed. No matter who it is, I don't want to be disturbed, you understand? General Electric, 310, 39, 37, 34, 300. Hello. Hello, Gretchen. I just called you up to say goodbye. I'm going away on a little trip. No, I won't bother to come home for my bag. I won't take anything. Listen, darling. Stock went rather bad today, but don't worry. I'm fixing it so you and the boy will be all right. My insurance policy, you know. I can borrow on that. And if anything happens to me on this trip, well, you'd get a lot. Oh, no, of course, nothing will happen. Take care of yourself, darling. Kiss the boy for me. Goodbye. Goodbye. God forgive me. God forgive me.
Business leaders said that recovery would take place in 60 days. But 1929 went by, and 30, and 31, and 32... with prosperity around a constantly receding corner. Over 1,000 banks failed in 1930, and 6 million were out of work. A quiet, worried crowd gathered in Washington on March 4, 1933, to watch the inauguration of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The rest of the country listened to the ceremony by radio, and the heart of America beat stronger as listeners heard the new president say...
This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive, and will prosper. We must act, and act quickly. I shall ask Congress for the one remaining instrument to meet the crisis, broad executive power, to wage a war against the emergency as great as the power that would be given to me if we were in fact invaded by a foreign force. The people of the United States have not failed. In their need, they have registered a mandate that they want direct, vigorous action. They have made me the present instrument of their wishes. In the spirit of the gift, I take it. In this dedication of a nation, we humbly ask the blessing of God. May he protect each and every one of us. May he guide me in the days to come.
President Roosevelt proclaimed the bank holiday to stem the tide of his joy. Soviet Socialist Republic of Russia was finishing one five-year plan and beginning another. In Germany, the Nazis rose to power under Adolf Hitler. The world's economic crisis, the burden of reparations, and widespread discontent gave Hitler, a magnetic speaker, a chance to seize the reins of government. Elected Chancellor on January 30th, 1933, Herr Hitler said,
"More than 14 years have passed since the unhallowed day, when dazzled by promises of home and abroad, the German people forgot the most precious heritage of its past, its honor and its freedom, and then lost all. The task to be solved is the heaviest since time immemorial. German people, give us 4 years' time and then judge. May Almighty God place his blessing on our work, for we do not desire to fight for ourselves, but for Germany."
The Nazis repudiated the Versailles Treaty and the Young and Dawes Plan. They began an anti-Semitic campaign. France, with an eye on Hitler, strengthened her border defenses. Italy followed suit. The rest of Europe built up armies, bought arms and munitions, until it became the armed camp of 1914 again. To the west, the Orient seethed and bubbled. For Japan, at the clearing Manchuria of the Chinese army of Chiang Shih-Yuan, and setting up the state of Manchukuo, had launched a drive on the province of Weihou. Reprimanded by the Assembly of the League of Nations, the delegation from Japan...
46 government voting, and 45 votes for the League's procedure. Japan was the only dissenting vote. I wonder what they'll do.
What can they do?
Wait, he's left his seat. He's going up in the rock.
Think you, Mr. Walker?
Yes, he's going to address the League Assembly. Come on down here where we can hear him.
It is a source of profound regret and disappointment to the Japanese delegation and to the Japanese government that the draft report has now been adopted by this assembly. Japan finds it impossible to accept. The Japanese government finds that Japan and other members of the League entertain different views on the manner to achieve peace in the Far East. And the Japanese government is obliged to feel that it has now reached the limit of its endeavors to cooperate with the League of Nations in regard to the Chino-Japanese differences.
Walker's walking out.
Japan, walking out of the League of Nations.
This will mean trouble later on. You mark my words.
Plenty of trouble.
The war drums were beginning to roll again. The guns to thunder. On August 6, 1933, they sounded in Cuba. 21 were killed, 146 wounded. A few days later, Machado resigned and fled with his family. November saw the resumption of diplomatic and trade relations between the United States and Russia. And on December 5th, at 5:32 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, John Barleycorn was welcomed like a prodigal with the repeal of the 18th Amendment. New York department stores sold over 100,000 bottles of liquor on the following day. Crowds stood in the rain to get in and buy. Rich, poor, old, young.
Take out, ma'am. What do you want? You don't have to whisper anymore. It's legal.
I wonder if you have a corkscrew, mister.
Corkscrew's in the basement. You can't drink it in here.
I said to Mother a little
fine. Never had any. Oh, I've had a little scotch, and now I'm going through the ride.
He has three highballs and ending up why I said he was out.
You want dry gin, ma'am?
Certainly not. If the country's legally wet, I want wet gin.
I don't want to buy anything. I just came in to see what real liquor looks like.
It was in a little brown bottle. I ain't seen any since 1919.
Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf? That funny little tune was the theme song of the winter of 33 and 34. The old wolf had been shooed away. Times were better. Millions had gone back to work. By now, campaign set taxi wheels to turning again. The guns have spoken in the distance, now and then. In Paris, in the riots over the Savisky scandal. In Austria, when a civil war flared, burned, and died. Not 2 weeks ago, Havana streets were bloodstained. And the armies of Paraguay and Bolivia are fighting in the Chapo. Here in America, their rat-a-tat-tat was heard during the strikes in Toledo and Minneapolis. Rising monarchist sentiments in Germany may overthrow the Nazi regime of Adolf Hitler and restore the family of Hohenzollern. Yet, in spite of world unrest, Mr. Average Man is more hopeful for the future, more contented with the present than he has been in many months.
What time is that, Mary?
9:30, John. Mm-hmm. I think the clock's a little fast, though.
Why, of course it's fast. Been fast for more than 20 years.
Why, have we had it that long?
Didn't I buy it and bring it home to you for an anniversary present?
Mm-hmm.
That was about a month before Billy was born.
Mm-hmm.
He was 20 last April.
That's right. 20 years. Well, a lot of things have happened in those 20 years. It's ticked away, John.
Yeah. A lot of nice things. And a lot of bad ones, too.
Mm-hmm.
Still, I guess you, me, and the old clock are all good for another 20.
I hope so.
Why, of course we are. And we're going to take things easy. Have a good time, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Children are all grown up now. We haven't any responsibilities. Why, we might even take a trip.
Well, but John, you suppose there's another difference?
Oh, don't fuss. Ain't this new deal working all right? Banks can't close now.
No.
Stock money can't hold up. And the heavyweight championship is right back in the old USA.
Yes, but John, what about all these strikes?
Oh, they'll be settled all right.
They say all those countries in Europe are buying guns and munitions.
Oh, there's always talk of war, Mary.
I know, John, but all this trouble between Japan and Russia.
Oh, they play up stuff like that because it makes good headlines.
But England building more battleships, and so is the United States.
Well, they got to spend the taxpayers' money some way, you know.
And they say there's a terrible drought out there. There's most likely going to be a food shortage.
The Lord will provide me. There'll be enough to go around for everybody.
Yeah, I hope so, John.
Yeah, hope we get so we can see. I tell you, Mary, there ain't a thing can happen from now on.
Well, that'll just about wrap things up for today. Certainly hope you enjoyed the programs. If you'd like to contact us for more information on how to purchase the programs, give us a request for upcoming programs, or just any kind of comments you'd like whatsoever, you may do so by going to our website at otrsite.com, or you may email us at jerry@otrsite.com, or you may call area code 562-696-4387. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And this is Jerry Hendiga saying thanks a lot for listening. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you right here next week, same time, same station. Bye now.